You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I'm here with a very special guest. Reza Asghari is here with me, writer, comedian Reza Asghari. Thank you for joining, Reza.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Always good to talk to you.
Yes, same here. Always a pleasure. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about, something I know that you've been wanting to talk about this, and it's something that we will never escape. And we're talking about ridiculous, offensive characters and just outlandish plot lines and stories. And just all you have to do is do a little light digging, and you will find like some of the most offensive characters are created in comic books. One of the ones that I can think of, I can't remember the guy's last name. His first name is Baz, and I believe he's Lebanese. And they introduced this new Green Lantern as he got in the wrong van. He had to take a van because he needed to get away from something. And basically, he hijacked a van that had a bomb in it. So, of course, there's this Lebanese character that they think has a bomb, and the police are after him, and somehow the Green Lantern ring reaches him. So that's
interesting that you say that, because I was looking for more racist representation of, like, Middle Easterners, because I kind of felt left out growing up reading this stuff. Like, well, really, well, the closest thing we had was, like, this character called Arabian Knight, and he was just sort of like, you know, an Aladdin knockoff, but earlier than Aladdin. It's almost as if they didn't really care for us back then.
Aw. Well, they do within the last 10 years, at least 10 or 15, because it was created by Jeff Johns, of all people. So, yeah, that's a bit ridiculous. And this character is still very prevalent to this day. And they're actually talking about using this character in like some form of a series or in movies or something. And I just don't get it. But, you know,
what's funny is a lot of these characters are still kind of prevalent, but they've just toned down the racism of some of them.
Yeah. And hopefully, like, the problem, I think, lies really in, like, the roots of the character, how the character is born, how that character is created. That creates the narrative that they're kind of stuck with, unless they just completely, you know, redo the character, just keep the name. And at that point, it's like, why? You know, just create a new character. Let it go.
It definitely, like, as you can see the difference in the development and like creation of characters over the decades from when comics started until now, because like if you want to start the list with offensive characters or stories, we can pretty much just knock off everything from the 40s.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean,
all the propaganda comics.
Yeah, lots of tribal covers, and by tribal I mean they weren't going with African Americans. They were going with straight Africans and being like, you know, Bushmen, essentially, and very basic as far as like, oh, they just wanted to cannibalize you. That's what they were there for. You know, they're black cannibals in the bush in the wild. And it's like, okay, cool. So every comic book created in the 40s is just essentially racist as shit. That's awesome.
Pretty much, yeah. We can cover that whole decade by just using the quote, racist as shit.
Yep, I think so. So do you have anything to add from that era? Like any character in particular that you were thinking of?
Well, one actually that always intrigued me was a character called Egg Foo. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah, wasn't he like shaped like an egg?
Literally, it was just a Chinese guy, or I should say a Chinese guy's face on an egg, and they just depicted it in the most racist. It was Humpty Dumpty as an Asian.
It's God.
It was so bizarre, and it lasted for quite a while.
Yeah, I just pulled up a picture of him. Yeah, he's definitely an egg-shaped giant. Looks like a giant egg-shaped.
yeah, he was a giant. Dude. He was the original MODOK, essentially, the giant head.
Yeah, that's what he looks like. And he was an enemy of Wonder Woman, apparently.
Yes.
And this was created in 1965.
Yeah, I mean, the propaganda stuff and the racism went all the way up until, I think, like, the early 80s and, like, even, like, trickled into the early 90s.
Wow. I mean, I remember, like, the guy, I can't remember his name, and I feel bad about it, the Green Lantern's sidekick, like Hal Jordan's buddy at the airfield. They affectionately nicknamed him Pie Face, right?
Yes, Pie Face. And they nicknamed him that because at the time that was a racial slur towards Asian people because it was like a reference to people's faces who are flat and circular.
Yeah. Really? Not cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not cool, DC. Not cool at all.
I'm glad you brought Pie Face up because I wasn't sure if I should add that to my list of things or not, but that definitely needs to be on there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely needs to make that list. If we're talking Egg Foo, then we definitely need to bring up Pie Face. And also Yellow Claw is another one. What was
Fu
it?
Manchu. Yeah.
Man, even to a point.
Any early Asian characters, and even, I mean, any early characters of different ethnicity or culture other than white. Like, every black character had to have the word black in front of their name.
I don't know. I think Black Vulcan is going to disagree with that.
I don't know what Black Goliath might say, or Black Mariah, or Black Panther, for that matter. However, Luke Cage did get somehow a pass on that, so kudos to him.
And interestingly enough, DC, for the Legion of Superheroes, they created a character back in the 70s called Tyrock.
Yes.
And,
Tyrock. Tyrock think, was bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, he really was.
Because he was kind of like a black white supremacist, like, in a sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he came onto the field to knock down barriers and ended up creating a whole list of new ones. He was a big fan of segregation.
Yes. Yeah. It was such a bizarre thing to see that. Like, I know that confused a lot of white children reading comics because they weren't sure. Like, they heard it from their parents, but they never heard it from the other side.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get what they were doing here, you know, because he was like, he was basically the hero of this island. I think the nation, like, was Mar-Zell or something like that. Mar-Zell. And...
Let's go with Mars.
Yeah, we'll do that. So he was there to enforce racial separatism. So basically, he wanted to get rid of the undesirables that weren't of the same skin color.
So essentially, his superhero name could have been Black Hitler.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. So, I mean, I totally kind of get, like, they're saying, oh, you know, well, there's another side to this, and it's... Like, if you can look at it from their side and be like, whoa, this is wrong, then why can't you look at it from, you know, the Caucasian side and be like, this is wrong? But they really almost made him kind of villainous in a lot of ways. So it really didn't work at all.
I think it was purposeful, too, as well, to make him that way. Because, like, they wanted the character, I think, to be a villain, but it was just the wrong backstory to back that villainy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just really... Some bad choices were made. Let's just say choices were made. We don't always approve of them, especially with this kind of stuff. We never approve of them.
Genuinely bad for the African-American community when it comes to comic book history because they have not been represented well over time. No. I mean, I actually have one that I collect for historical purposes called Clean Fun with Sugarfoot Jones. And it's spelled S-H-O-O-G-A.
Oh, okay.
The entire thing is basically all the characters look like an Aunt Jemima bottle, and they spell their dialogue like the way that the racist way you exactly hear in your head.
That's insane.
And like it goes even like that was I don't know how early that was, but even like decades later, in The Spirit, he had a sidekick named Ebony White, who was basically the same character as Sugarfoot Jones.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at that, Ebony White, and Ebony White couldn't be any less white, really. I mean,
yeah,
it's very African-American-esque in the comics, drawn to physical caricature, like disproportionate measures, like just a ridiculous amount, like a huge ears and like a big lips and stuff like that. And they drew him that way. And unfortunately, like a lot of these stories that Will Eisner was writing were incredibly detailed and well done and well thought out. But unfortunately, almost every single one of the stories has this Ebony White character in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you say that this is so good and like that you can like recommend this to your friend or something to read when it just has such a blatantly racial like characterization? It just doesn't. It's really hard to do. It's really hard to justify now.
Things like that, when I talk to people or tell people about them, I always now preface it with like what TCM does when they put on like Gone with the Wind or a movie like that. Before the movie, they'll say, historically, this is what is happening during this time. However, we do not agree with the views and opinions that are depicted in this film. I'm like, y'all need to understand this is how it was at the time, and this is what the person who created this was thinking.
Yeah. Here's one here in that vein of thinking. There's a character called Anarchist.
Mm.
And we're not talking about the one from DC Comics, that anarchy dude. We're talking about Anarchist from the X-Men kind of world. Is it like kind of an X-Force, but more of an ecstatic type world?
Okay.
And this guy he was an African-American named Tyke Alakar, or Alasar, depending on how you want to pronounce it. He didn't understand. He was adopted by Caucasians, so he did not understand why his skin tone was darker. So basically, when he was younger, he would obsessively wash his hands to try to get the dirt off because he thought that he was just unclean.
Oh, wow.
Right. So this racial kind of shame led him to discover his mutant power, which is that he sweats acid.
Wow. How does that have anything to do with that backstory?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But apparently, he just is not very proud of his, like, heritage and his powers even. So what do? Like the rest of the team, they nickname him Captain Coconut.
Oh Christ. Are you kidding me?
He's white on the inside, yeah.
Oh wow.
At least they didn't call him Mr. Oreo or whatever, you know?
Yeah. They didn't call him like ex Bojangles or something.
yeah. I mean, like, come on. This was like, and this isn't that long ago. I mean, this is ecstatic. So we're talking about what, late 90s, early 2000s, somewhere around there?
Yeah. And what fascinates me the most about all this stuff is someone thought of it and then wrote it down. And another, at least one or two people looked at it and said, yep, this is approved. Make 10,000 copies.
Yeah, that works. Let's get that going.
Yeah. We're like an honorable mention to Top Cow Comics, because they came up with a character just aptly named Shithead, and he's just made completely of poop. Yeah, that was a real thing.
Wow. I'm guessing a villain, or?
I'm not sure. I didn't really look much further into it after that. I just gave up after made entirely of poop.
All right. So let's dive real quick, since we've already hit the Asian culture and we've hit the African American community pretty hard. Let's go with the women now.
Oh,
one of my favorites. Yeah, one of my favorites in doing some of the research was again, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we were just talking about Ecstatic. There's another character, and it apparently Ecstatic is just filled with like racially awful characters that just stereotype after stereotype. So one of them was called the Gin Genie.
Oh, yes. I was literally going to bring that up. So thank you for mentioning Gin Genie.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it when I was reading it. She basically, she has this seismic wave power,
mm-hmm.
but she can only do it in like larger increments depending upon her blood alcohol content.
Yeah.
So if the blood alcohol content is low, she can do like small little, you know, like probably knock a glass over or something at the table, like Ghost with Patrick Swayze. She'd be doing that kind of shit. But if she has a full-on bender and just gets like blitzed, you better watch the fuck out, because she's gonna, like, she could cause the next Grand Canyon, in other words. Like, she's super powered up. The only problem is that she's a mean-ass drunk, too.
And so, can I mention my favorite part of the character?
Yeah.
Is the more drunk she gets, obviously, like you said, the more powerful she becomes, but the problem with that is 90% of the time, she ends up hitting her teammates instead of the people she's supposed to be attacking.
Yeah, because she's just drunk off her ass, so she's like, she has literally no coordination, you know? There's no hand-eye movement there that's going to work for somebody that's just fall down drunk.
Well, her problem, too, as a character, is that if she starts coming down and, like, detoxing off the alcohol, her powers cause her to have, like, severe seismic tremors. So it's not good for anyone if she doesn't stay drunk.
Oh, my God. So this is a character that just has to be drunk pretty much all... She's probably going to live until she's about 40, and then that's it.
That's generous at 40.
Yeah, I would say at this point... You have to look at, why are you a hero if you have to continuously stay, you know what I mean? Like, at what detriment to your own body? Like, at some point, I would give up. I'd be like, you know what? I don't need to be a hero. There's plenty of others. Look, I saw this guy Wolverine. He can't die. That, you know, let him do everything. That's cool. Like, you've got the Avengers now. What? Why do I need to be a hero? This is literally going to kill me.
And of course, like, you know, she must have felt like the Incredible Hulk of the team. Every time things get really bad, somebody pulls out a bottle of schnapps, like, all right, do your thing.
Yeah, she's like, load me up and let's go. And speaking
One of my favorite female characters. Oh, I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
That's all right. I was going to segue. I was like, speaking of load, I was thinking we would cover, what's her name? Oh, she's a... I can't remember her name now. Something big. I want to say Big Bertha.
Bertha, I think you're talking
Big
about.
Yeah, Big Bertha. Big Bertha. Yeah. So it's like, I think her name is Ashley, and she's like this gorgeous fashion model. But she discovers that her mutant ability,
she can kind of expand the body.
Yeah, she can gain mass at a hyper accelerated rate. So she could do that, and she becomes like this invulnerable kind of a, like the Blob kind of, in a way.
Yeah.
But the only problem is when she wants to go back to her day job of like modeling and shit, she has to basically just be full on bulimic. She has to purge every time. Which is super disgusting and super offensive to anybody that struggles with, you know, any type of, body dysmorphism or anything like that, where they just have issues accepting their own body, and then you just have a character that can't accept their, you know, like that has ability. Yeah, I could be beautiful
or have those issues, as you know, right, with their body at that age.
Yeah, it's like, I could be beautiful, I just have to puke all the time, and so if this character can do it, then why can't I?
Well, especially with her, like, doing it at such a rapid rate, they're like, if I puke three times now, I'll be 30 pounds lighter instantly. Big Bertha did it.
Yeah. Yeah. And trust me, I mean, I've gotten food poisoning. I mean, it's a little different, granted, yes. But, like, purging like that, like, vomiting is one of the worst things, I think, ever. I hate it.
It is the worst. I'd rather get a paper cut and stabbed at the same time. It's the worst feeling.
Yeah, and you know, like, it's one of those rare ones that you don't forget. Like, when it starts to happen again, you're like, oh, God, here it comes.
Yeah.
This bestial monster thing that I tried to, like, repress and never have happen again is suddenly happening. Dear God, why? Why is it, you know? And then, like, you go through all these emotions, and then you puke. And then you're fine.
What's worse is after the first time, you brace yourself because you know it's going to happen at least once or twice more. And you're like, you know if that second time's coming, but it's just, you can never prepare.
Yeah. No, you can't. Absolutely cannot prepare ever for that kind of thing. It's just, it's one of those things that sneaks up on you. I guess the only way you can do that is if you go to the gas station and you go, yeah, sushi sounds like a good idea. Then you kind of get, you know, you kind of deserve what you're getting there in a way, because you should know better that's like one of those things to me. But like, you know, I've gotten sick off of, I bought a, like a, they used to have breakfast bagels at McDonald's, and I bought one and the ham was rancid and I didn't know it because it was covered with cheese and egg, hot peppers and stuff like that. So I ate it. And then like the worst thing about it was I was a cook at a restaurant and I was on the line working when it hit.
Ooh.
And I literally was like, I put a plate up under the warmer for a server to grab. And I was like, there you go. And then I turned and just hurled right into the trash can, like for about a half an hour straight.
Sounds about right.
And like, you think that like, if you're sick, you have food poisoning, you don't want to be around food. But imagine you're working someplace where that is all you smell and see.
Exactly. It's like every scent that you don't need is going right up your nose.
Right. It was awful. There would be no other worse type of situation than if you were in a bathroom and none of the toilets flushed and everybody had like hardcore Mexican food like a day ago.
We all went to Chipotle, buddy. Strap in.
Exactly. Yes. So go ahead and hit me with a couple other characters. Do you have any more ladies or?
Yeah, there was one more lady, actually, that I wanted to throw in. One of my favorites is Hansi, the girl who loved the swastika. I'm sure you're familiar with that one.
Yes, I struggled with whether I wanted to buy that comic or not, because every time I go back home, it's at the shop, and it's always still on the wall, because no one's bought it.
Well, let me tell you, you should, okay? Because it is not what you think it is. The cover is deceiving. Because it's actually published by a Christian-based publishing company, and the entire story is about a German girl who is actually, like, you know, loves Hitler and the Nazis and the swastika stuff, and then comes to America and finds Jesus and capitalism and is converted and says, well, I'm not going back.
Wow.
A lot of people see the cover and don't realize that it's like a complete reverse propaganda book.
That's weird, dude.
It's absolutely one of my favorites because none of it makes sense. No. It's called Hansi, the girl who loved the swastika. It's published by a Christian publishing company. It somehow it tells you that capitalism is better than Nazis.
Wow. Yeah, no, not my thing. But it does sound like something that I definitely need to, I guess, learn more about the capitalism part, because that sounds great. Yeah, I love capitalism. It sounds so fun.
There is a couple that really just threw me out of my chair that I wanted to throw your way and see if you were familiar with.
Sure, hit me.
This one character who went by the name Bueno Excelente, and his whole synopsis is he fights evil with the power of perversion. And by that
is from a Hitman world, right?
No, his power is just strictly to sexually assault other men. And there's a story that it's heavily implied that he did that to Kyle Rayner of the Green Lantern.
Yeah, Garth Ennis created this character, didn't he?
I'm not 100% sure, actually. I was just so fascinated by the character, I forgot to find out who actually created it.
I've got money on it being Garth Ennis. Like, that's going to be my guess, because he created some effed up shit back in the Hitman days for DC.
Uh-huh.
And that sounds like right up his alley as far as, like, I mean, come on. He did The Boys, which we have.
To be honest, when you said that, I think it was from a Hitman comic, so yes.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. Yeah. I've heard of that character in the past. I just forgotten, to be honest. That's a character that you don't want to meet on the streets, in other words.
Well, it's probably best that you block out a character whose power is essentially the worst scene in Carlito's Way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You really he's still a very relevant writer. And it's amazing some of the shit, like even Arseface, for an example.
Oh, yeah.
Creating that character for Preacher, like, and it just being this guy that, you know, had just got his face shot. You know, he tried to, I think what, he tried to kill himself, I think.
Yeah, he tried to commit suicide and he just blew off his face and the reconstructive surgery made it look like a butthole.
Yeah.
That's his backstory.
Yeah, poor guy. Poor guy. Yeah, there's a lot of that in Garth Ennis's world for sure. I got one. Have you heard of Extrano?
Oh, Extrano is one of my favorite characters of all time because he ties into two of my other favorite characters.
Okay, go ahead then. You line them up and I'll throw and hopefully get a strike or something. I don't know.
Well, the first few issues of the New Guardians series, which I think it was like early 90s, that's how far this goes, was just insane. Extraño was one of the members of the New Guardians who was a gay Peruvian magician, essentially. And he didn't last very long, the poor guy, because he went up against my other favorite character of all time called the Hemogoblin. And this was a guy just created basically by white supremacists as a vampire hybrid creature to bite minority characters and infect them with AIDS and kill them, which he did to our friend Extraño.
My God.
Yeah, it's one of the most amazing things I think I've ever seen put to print.
I can't even, like, yeah. The Hemogoblin is the dumbest. I don't. HIV positive vampire.
Yeah. All of this happened in one issue.
And he was created by a white supremacist group.
Yes.
And he called himself, they chose that name. I'm the Hemogoblin.
They chose the name Hemogoblin, which is like, oh, icing on the cake.
And this is like the DC universe, right? This isn't even, yes, like, were they even trying to make fun of like the Hobgoblin or the Green Goblin or anything? Or was it just...
I don't even think they had that in mind. I think they were just like, what's the most racist thing we could possibly get away with printing?
Who is the editor on this book?
And honestly, I'm not even sure because it just, the characters in the story, again, they fascinate me so much. I need to do a better job at knowing who created them.
I think it was edited by Johnny Walker. I think that was the editor of that series. How else can you, like, justify that? How else can you say, like, how did this get past anybody, you know? Somebody had to be straight up drunk off their ass to approve this shit.
The writers were in a room, and they were like, dude, we've been up all night, we got 3 hours left, and we're two bottles down, what do we do? And some dude cut his hand, and he was like, Hemogoblin, let's run with it.
I'm the Hemogoblin. What?
It's such an insane character. I've written like 7 sketches about him.
Nice.
Which one of them includes the Blue Beetle, by the way, so I may need to call on you soon.
Yeah, well, you know, the Blue Beetle can be available for certain situations, for sure.
The other one that I love that ties into the New Guardians, in issue 2, after things had already gone awry for them, mm-hmm, they go up against a villain named Snowflame. And Snowflame's entire skill set is ingesting ungodly amounts of cocaine and then becoming super powerful.
As one would, yeah. That would really, as a kid, that would make me really want to try cocaine, I think.
That guy is, I think, the most like Bruce Wayne of all the villains DC has ever created. Like the most realistic, lifelike possible character that you could become.
Wow. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's particularly in the 80s, for sure.
Oh, yeah. We've all seen footage of guys like that having to be taken down by about 9 cops. I'm like, is that Snowflame?
Mm-hmm. So let's mention a few others real quickly. I'm going to go down the list here of a few that I still have. Shamrock, who is the biggest Irish stereotype of anything. Like, her power was literally called the luck of the Irish. Like, her militant IRA father prayed to bless his son, who was named Patty, of course, you know. Patty was killed by an IRA bombing, so on and so forth. So just a ridiculous. And by the way, I'm going to slam Daredevil again for the Netflix writers for creating an Irish gang that sat around and just had plates of potatoes and cabbage and whiskey. Fuck you. Like, yeah. First of all,
they get pretty lazy. It's like, what do these guys eat? I don't know. Put some potatoes on the table.
Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. That's not cool, but okay. No one's saying anything or complaining about it. I guess, it's just my problem, but, apparently it's a lot of people's problems if they've noticed characters like Shamrock as well. So not
all that cool. Was missing was just some Lucky Charms.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Another character I was thinking of was earlier on. I think they really kind of took a turn for Cisco Ramon and made him a much more complex character in the Flash television series. But originally, yeah, the character of Vibe was created for the Justice League, and then later Justice League Detroit, I think. They did a stunt there where he was basically a Hispanic gangbanger from the mean streets of Detroit in the mid to early 80s. So they turned that one around a lot. Another one I thought was ridiculous was Codpiece.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This dude that had, like, he thought that women didn't love him or like him at all because he had a small penis. So he creates this weapon, like Codpiece, that goes in the front of his pants that looks like a giant dick that has different types of deadly weapons attached to it, like rockets and drills and things like that. And even like a spring-loaded boxing glove. So that was a
serial killer that actually exists.
Yeah, not somebody I want to run across anytime soon. Another one, which I always kind of honestly in its silliness, I enjoyed the character, but not what the character stood for, of course, was a character in Marvel called the Hate Monger.
Yes, I was going to mention Hate Monger as well. It was fascinating to see a clan member with superpowers.
Yeah. He would infect people with a hate ray that would give them rage issues, and then he would use that to his advantage.
Yeah, he was doing what the neo-Nazi guys always talk about and stuff, like fill your heart with hate. He actually did that.
Yeah, and also, like, the Hate Monger, by the way, when he was defeated, he was unmasked and revealed to be a still-alive Adolf Hitler.
That had to be the best part. It was like, whoa, all right, M. Night Shyamalan twist, didn't see that one coming.
What a reveal in less than 20 years after World War II, you know? There's a thing that says too soon, and I don't know, but that seems kind of too soon to me. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Especially when all of his, appearances were him just trying to hang Black Panther with a noose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Captain America fought him a few times, too, I think, as well. But just bad decisions, guys, bad decisions. Do you have any more you want to add real quick before we have to unfortunately close this out?
Well, one quick one that was one of my other favorites that was silly, a partner of Gin Genie, was the dog welder who just found people and welded dogs to their faces. But the one that surprised me the most was it was from an old comic called Boy Comics #9, a character called He-She, literally called He-She, and he was half man and half woman. And the big thing was that He-She somehow tricked a woman into marrying him/her to defraud them of all their money.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing I've heard in a while.
Especially in current times now where everyone is so accepting of transgender people and trans, rights and things like that. And everybody's just like, yes, it's awesome. Be who you are. To find out that character existed at one point. Oh man, that will bring up a whole new set of problems.
Damn straight it will. Yeah. Well, with that, I think we're gonna wrap this up here, Reza. Thank you so much for being a guest on this, and I'm astounded that we haven't even really scratched the surface. There's so many more offensive characters in comic book history throughout the years, and it makes sense. You know, comic books have been around since what, the late 30s, early 40s.
You know, early 30s and stuff. Hell, even the 20s with some of the underground stuff.
True, very true. Yeah, like some of the pulp publications and things like that. So yeah. There's going on 100 years of bad decisions that could have been made. So obviously there's a lot more to discuss, and we may get to those in another podcast. But for now, thank you so much, Reza, for being a guest on this. We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Anytime you want to do a part two, you let me know and I'll be there.
All right. Sounds good, sir. And thank you, the listeners, for tuning into The Real Short Box. We do a live podcast on YouTube Live pretty much every Monday at around 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's on the Rumble Spoon Productions YouTube page. You can find us there for the live podcast. We also do our audio podcasts. They come out every Thursday or Friday normally. And we put them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, TuneIn, and a whole host of other podcast services. So if you can't find us, let us know. Reach out to us, and we'll put ourselves on there for you for your convenience. Again, we do really appreciate it. And if we don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps we will see you at the wonderful, lovely comic book shop. Good night, everybody.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.